Hi, I'm Lashana Lynch, and you are listening to the Post-Credit Scene podcast.
Well, we are back in the stew.
Yes,
we are
sir.
Back in the stew. What I'm not going to do is say it's been a long time, because every time we record, like, guys, it's been so long since we've been in the stew. People think we won't like each other, but we do. But we are the Post-Credit Scene podcast.
Yes, sir.
A 14 HQ original, lovers of film, TV and theatre. Before I introduce my esteemed fellow hosts, just want to shout out a few things. Recently, we recorded an episode about Industry Season 3. Make sure to go check it out.
Yep.
We've got some really cool content coming out. We had an interview with an industry insider. When I say industry, I mean film and TV insider. We won't tell you who, but that episode will be coming out in the next like month or so. And it's going to be a good one to check out for sure. And by the time you've listened to this episode, you would have seen a very, very exclusive interview with a UK star who's sort of, she's gone global. She's doing her thing.
Yeah, man.
And it was a really, really good conversation for us as a podcast to do what we did. And I say we as a collective to do what we did was a very, very huge achievement. That's 3 years essentially now of work that's gone into that. You know, to get to a moment where you can record a podcast episode and sort of take over the way we did. I'm not going to spoil it too much. You'll know when you know. But yeah, we did something really, really cool recently. So shout out to everybody on the pod.
Well, now, like, this will
be out.
To be out, so you could hit.
Oh, go ahead, bro.
Yeah, now we interviewed the... I was about to say such a morbid joke. But yes, we interviewed UK legend Lashana Lynch.
Round of applause.
Yeah, man. Honestly, big friend of the show. Friend of the show for real. You're probably going to hear her voice in this episode. but yeah, like, yeah, that was a sick moment, man. And, you know, the fact that we got, like, guys, like, there's like a difference, isn't there, between like doing like an interview, like a junket or something over like Zoom. And we're super grateful for all of us and we still love them. But being asked to bring our set on, you know, to like a hotel and build it and invite her on is outstanding. And like she came on set and she recognized the set and stuff. And I was like, this is so dope. And we had a healthy amount of time with her, which again in this industry is not very normal. So for us to get that, we obviously like, you know, big shout out to the Sky, to her team especially, and herself. But it was a dope interview, and I hope you guys have watched it at this point.
I'm Kingsley Benedict and you're listening to Post Credit Scene Podcast.
If you guys are looking for a new series to watch, we would definitely recommend The Day of the Jackal. It's a spy thriller. It's
so good, man.
And it's from the get-go. It's a great one.
No, but I'm going to.
Yeah. It's probably going to be up there with one of my favourites of the season.
Really?
Yeah. Bro.
It's that good.
Dude, this year has been kind of brazy with
TV shows
in particular. Yeah.
It's been a crazy year for TV shows.
But,
films,
bro.
So.
Yeah.
The Day of the Jackal? I'm telling you, bro.
That
opening scene, yeah. Arguably, Sister Guys obviously probably got recency bias in there, yeah. But top 10 opening scenes I've ever watched in film TV.
Okay,
caught me off guard. Yeah, because there's actually so much that happens in the opening scene before you get to what's like raw. That's a madness.
That's
a
mad thing.
Yeah,
and it gets you hooked immediately, bro. Immediately, yeah. Bro. It was such a good opening scene.
What other TV shows have you liked this year? The reason I'm asking is because this is probably the last episode we're going to do that's focused on a TV show.
Not really. We got our end of year.
That's what
I was going to lead
into.
Before we get to the end of year stuff. So what
we were saying, like Shogun.
Yeah.
And what do we say? Obviously, show we're coming into today, Penguin.
Mm-hmm.
Got House of the Dragon in there.
House of the Dragon.
Okay.
Nah, not for me.
I don't think it's going to be in my top five.
Lord of the Rings season 2.
Yeah. Okay.
Incredible.
I look, you want to do, I'm not going to do a top 10, but I could so easily do a top 15.
I hear it.
TV shows, it's been a good year.
Yeah, it's been a good year for TV shows.
Good year. Because at the start of the year, we had like Shogun, X-Men 97, which was great. There was a lot of like big shows. We had Abbott Elementary this year as well.
Yeah, two seasons of Elementary this year.
Which is works.
Yeah. It's nuts, yeah, because I don't know, like, okay, if we get one comment, from this comment here, that's not from one of us. If somebody is listening right now, yeah, then we'll do it. But I had an idea to do our usual top five shows of the year, right? Then doing a top 50 shows of the year and top 50 films of the year collectively PCS list that we don't do on the pod, that we just like release as like a list. Do you know what I'm saying? Boom. If yeah, that would be dope.
I look, you want to do an awards show?
Same.
Like on the pod.
PCS awards, and we all come in suits.
I'm not mad at that.
Oh, you caught me off guard with that. Let's get into today's episode.
Fresh from the seats.
8 episodes. If you told me 2.5 years ago that there was going to be a series of this kind, probably wouldn't have believed you. Just because we didn't know what was going to come from the Batman universe and Matt Reeves' Batman universe. But that film was very much loved. There was a particular character. There were a number of characters, to be
fair. Yeah, for sure.
That people really, really enjoyed. Jeffrey Wright's Jim Gordon.
Yeah, cold.
John Turturro's Carmine Falcone, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Cold.
Zoe Kravitz as Catwoman. Wasn't cool.
Mm-hmm. Cow. Yeah.
Greatest Catwoman of all time.
But you could argue there was a character that really stood out amongst the rest for a lot of people. And it would be Colin Farrell's The Penguin, otherwise known as Oz Cobb.
Yeah.
Who's a character that's always been of interest to fans of the Batman or of Batman as a character, one of the most interesting villains. But this is a series, The Penguin is a series that really dives into not just his backstory, but also provides you future context as to who he's become in the modern day following the aftermath of the Batman. So The Penguin is an American crime drama television series, which was developed by Lauren LeFranc for HBO. It's based on the DC Comics character of the same name. And it's a spin-off of The Batman from 2022. Picks up right in the aftermath of The Batman.
Literally immediately after as well.
Literally right after The Batman. We all collectively at least agree The Batman is a good film. Some of us love it more than others. Me and Manny completely adore the film. I know you like the film, but you have some gripes.
I love the film.
Okay, you're okay.
I love the film. I just don't think it's the best.
Did you love it at the time? At the time?
No, like, do you
it's
mind?
It's grown on you, innit? Don't
it's,
lie.
It's definitely grown on me more, 100%.
It's happened to a lot of people, bro.
100%, but it's still, obviously, as you know, my feelings are still not the best Batman iteration that we ever got.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
But
In my opinion.
It's so interesting that the series over time has sort of developed an adoration amongst, you know, different people who have maybe watched it again in the comfort of their home in a different environment, where in the cinema it's dark, you can end up falling asleep, or because it's very, very long and in-depth film with a lot happening, shall I say.
I've seen quite a few people say that that when they watch the cinema a few times, they just got bored. Like, people didn't like it first, event. They watched a few times afterwards.
Watch it at home, or you see clips.
Which I find that's not strange, but...
It's a long film, though.
It's a very long film. Mm. It's like... Not strange is not the right word, like... Because I didn't have that experience. Yeah, it's just different, I guess, isn't it?
What we'll do, and I hope you guys can agree with me, if you don't, fair enough. We'll give you like a quick season review and then like a tie into the episode 8 review, because episode 8 is the current episode that's going to be out by the time this comes out. And I think episode 8, me and Manny were just speaking about, is up there with the best of the season.
Yeah,
100%.
Incredible episode of TV.
Mm-hmm. What's that episode?
You said something interesting, and so did you, and it was one of our clips that went out. You both said that the first episode was one of your favourite episodes potentially ever, or at least a very, very good pilot episode.
Yeah.
What was it about that first episode that caught your attention, and what's kept you watching since, aside from just you loving the Batman, you loving DC Comics, or you being very interested in the Batman universe? What is it about this particular series and that episode that kept you going afterwards?
I think like the first and overall thing for me was the fact that they showed us who the Penguin was in one episode. Like, as in, like, they said...
Within the first 10 minutes.
Yeah. Like, we are going to show you the pain, the crookedness, the slyness, okay? Even the ambition, you know, even the compassion for Vic, you know, do you know what I mean? Okay, we're literally going to show you every side of this guy, but then for the next 7 episodes, we're gonna feed you one or two of those bits every episode, so you can see him for who he fucking is. And then by the time you get to the end of it, you can't even be shocked.
You know, what's so interesting.
Yeah,
is that. There's been so many comparisons to him and Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
Both sort of anti-heroes, who are not necessarily villains or heroes. They kind of fit in between both. Grey-area characters with nuance and so on and so forth.
In the Bulwarking Construction.
What's that, sorry?
In the Bulwarking Construction.
And it's so interesting the way in which slowly but surely this season has unraveled, as you said, the numerous sides to him. But by the end, it's hard to call him he's not an anti-hero by the end of this episode.
No!
Whereas at the start, he definitely is. He's a character that you have a bit of warmth for. You know he's a slyer. You know he's narcissistic. You know he's manipulative.
I'm not going to lie. I think after the third or fourth sly move in like episode 3-4, I said, yeah, he's a cunt, you know.
Do you know what? I said that we knew who he was from right at the beginning, from the very first scene. I think one thing that I mentioned before in one of the episodes that I really appreciate when writers and TV show are able to set the tone of the series or of the episode and be consistent with it throughout it, like within the themes and within the narrative and the storytelling. I feel like within the first few minutes, we got to see who Pegram really was. He was never an anti-hero. The reason that I felt like that, even watching the show, sometimes it was anti-hero is because we saw so much of his vulnerable side, seeing him do well for ex people, taking Victor in, so on and so forth. But at the end of it, everything he was doing was for selfish reasons. The way that he reacted to the Falcon, I can't remember his first name, the son, before he could. Yeah, and the way that he switched because the person essentially laughed at him was like, oh, no. But yeah, he's a child. He's a coward. He's an opportunist, and we see that from the first episode. That's who he is. Is that throughout the whole season, we just see people that are potentially worse than him, and sometimes like he's not the worst apple amongst other bad apples. So sometimes you can sympathize with a character like that. But I think from the very beginning, like looking back at it, he was never an anti-hero. They just rate it so well that they make you forget that this guy's a piece of shit. This guy's actually a piece of shit. And everything that he does, every bad move that he does, or every selfish thing that he does fits his character because that's who he is.
And he's probably, like, save us here with Chest here, I think he is the most hypocritical comic book character we've ever seen on screen. Whether that be a TV, film, whatever, I think he is the most hypocritical. He's has so many back and forths with so many characters. Okay, and ends up doing the exact same thing that he's accusing them of doing. Do you know what I mean?
Which speaks to his charisma and his charm, right? So he has a he has a way with words. And a self belief in what he's saying, even though he knows he's lying, to the point where, whether it's us as the audience or the characters in the scene, end up believing what he's saying, even though you probably know it's bullshit. There's been numerous times where initially in the first few episodes, Sophia knew that he was lying.
Yeah,
she knew, but the off chance that he might be telling the truth is so valuable that she takes the risk.
Same thing happens with the Falcone for crime family.
Yeah.
The same thing happens with the Maroni.
Same thing.
Victor. Same his mother. All of the people that he's interacted with end up falling into his web and his charm. We saw it in this final episode with his mum when he was like, "Mom, I'm gonna buy you this. I'm gonna buy you that." Monroe's.
Yeah, yeah.
But she knew who he was.
And it's not by accident, by the way, that they gagged him. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Just okay. Stop
that was the only time, bro. He's been caught like five times in this whole thing, bro. He even got caught in episode 2 when he was being naked and shit, bro. Do you remember? Mm. Right? But he've never gagged him, innit? Yeah, bro. They gagged him then because it was too simple that his greatest fucking weapon is his bloody mouth, bro.
Yeah, and I think when they got to that, I feel like going back to your point is that the reason why he got away with doing so much, even when people lied to him, like when he even lied to people knew he was lying, is because they underestimated him, how much of a piece of shit and how conniving he actually is. Because within all those lies, those other people would gain something from it. Even though I know that you're lying, I'm still going to get something from the back of it. Even his mum knew that he was lying this whole time. But the reason she kept him around is because she was getting something from on the back of him. And I think, like, going back to the scene of the gagged him, is because at that point is when I feel like they realised that he shouldn't be underestimated.
Yeah.
That, like you said, that his greatest gift is his mouth, is his gab. And I think at that point, they understood that we can't just let him get away with, like, saying whatever he wants because he will get what he wants.
Because as you said, he's a character that you would overlook. You look at him,
yeah,
doesn't fit the mold of a crime boss when you look at him aesthetically.
Mm-hmm.
Disfigured face, disformed leg, overweight. He wasn't isn't somebody that
you're no family.
He isn't somebody you're necessarily gonna buy into as a person, but he continuously finds a way to maneuver. And when you think about it, he's outmaneuvered some of the greatest crime bosses in Gotham somehow or another.
Right.
He's found a way to do so. So let's talk about, I want to get your thoughts on some of your favourite scenes first of the season and why that would be your favourite scene.
The first one that comes to mind.
I put you guys on the spot ever so slightly, so I can go if you want.
No, but fine. Okay,
go ahead.
I think it's episode 4
So that's Christine Migliotti episode.
Yeah, right at the end when she essentially gasses the. Or does that she do that in episode 5? No, it's episode 5 she does that, right? When she gasses the whole house, kills everybody.
It's 4, bro.
Does she do it in episode 4? Whenever she was, but when the mansion, she has that conversation with the family, just saying that, oh, essentially, all you guys put me away, but don't worry, tomorrow, like, it's going to be a brand new day. Yeah. And then she takes the little girl to the greenhouse.
Yeah.
And sleeps there. And then that scene of her going back into the house, picking up the mask and just walking around all these dead bodies.
In a dress, by the
way. In a dress. And then she opens up, shuts the window and wakes up my guy, Johnny. I just really enjoy that scene.
Johnny Vidi.
Yeah, I really enjoy that scene because it showcased like who she is as a character. And she got a win because I really wanted her to win. Throughout the whole season, I really wanted her to win. And I'm glad she got that win, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Chris, any thoughts?
It's tough because arguably that was the best episode. Like,
definitely top three.
Yeah. Like, it's a fantastic episode. But like, I'm trying to figure one that really caught me where I was like, right, that's crazy. But
I'll go.
Yeah.
One of mine is episode 7.
Okay.
So it's when Oz and Karma and no Oz and Maroney. What's his name again?
Sal.
It's when Oz and Sal Maroney confront each other in the underground.
Mm-hmm.
And Sal obviously has his stroke, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Oz is like really upset about the fact that Sal has died in that particular situation.
Yeah.
And that scene shows you how, I guess, disfigured in the head Oz is in one side, because he ends up like speaking to Sal even though he knows he's dead, and he's revealing everything that he's always wanted to say
mm-hmm.
about Sal, and the way he spoke about wanting to be the guy that took out Sal. He said something like did you hear me or something like that?
Yeah.
When he was speaking to Sal, even though Sal was...
So, like, you know, the big man or something like that.
I really enjoyed that scene because for me, that scene speaks to his ambition and how much he desires power, but he desires power for himself, and he desires it in a way in which he wants people to know he's the guy.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, he's always been overlooked by everybody and anybody. Carmine, Salvatore Maroni, Sofia Falcone,
mm-hmm.
or Gigante, shall I say. So for me, that scene speaks to who he is as a person, like the way he wants to win, and he wants people to know he's won. I really, really enjoyed Colin Farrell's. Colin Farrell's just been amazing in the series as a whole. Anyway, I really, really enjoyed.
That's an Emmy right there.
Yeah. Oh, listen, I was speaking to us about it before. Sometimes I forget this is Colin Farrell acting in there.
Yeah.
Because when you're watching a character, and obviously it's helped with the prosthetics and so on and so forth. But he really like immersed himself in the character in every facet, from aesthetics to voice to character, facial expressions and the little nuances in his face where you can see he's either very, very peeved, or you can see he's very, very happy, or he's being sneaky. His facial expressions, even within the prosthetics, are very visible. He's a very, very visceral actor.
Even like, you know, he was saying, I forgot what interview was. I think it was maybe Variety, but he was talking about how, like, even like the walk is different. You know, he said that, like, if it is like a day scene, or you know, it's the start of the day, or you see him like leave his room or leave his apartment. So he said like the walk isn't as like obvious, right? Mm-hmm. But he goes, as the day goes on, he gets tired. His leg starts to strain. So you'll see it's a lot more bouncy. You know what I mean? As he goes along. And I was like, well, that's incredible. Like you know, and he, you know, Colin Farrell said that that's not in the script, but it's something that on set you realize could affect certain scenes. So he speaks to the director and says, yo, mm-hmm. should we add this? You know what I mean? Okay. And when you get actors that care, you know, like that, okay, everyone else on that set starts to care.
Yeah.
You know, and you can tell, because everybody, this is one of the first series, okay, where a lot of the supporting characters really got their moment. Like Victor, Oz's mum.
Yeah.
Those last two Epps, she was outstanding.
One of my
favorite performances. She was outstanding.
Yeah.
Deirdre O'Connell, she's...
She absolutely killed it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Okay, Evan, even like prior to, okay, first like three episodes, okay, Johnny Vitti was cold. You know?
Yeah.
Like, playing.
Johnny Vitti.
Yeah. Bro, he's one of my favorite support actors ever.
That's what I'm saying, bro. Yeah. Like, he was absolutely fantastic. Yeah, okay. Like a lot of people got their shine. You know what I mean? And it's funny because the irony is, it is that's Penguin's life. That's so parallel to his life that this show's about him. It's called Penguin, right? But really and truly, okay, like for a lot of his life, people starred in his show. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Okay. And then obviously, like towards the end, or after episode four, I'd say, it became more about him. But like prior to that, okay, it was building the world like around him, and he almost felt like the support character.
You know what's interesting? You said it was building a world. This series has built a Gotham within Gotham,
and
in a sense of it expanded the world of Gotham. Knew nothing about Crime Point before the Penguin,
mm-hmm.
From the Batman, and it showed us the different aspects of poverty in Gotham. It showed us the wealth and class divide in Gotham, which mm-hmm. I really, really enjoyed. And obviously, Victor comes from a completely different world to the likes of a Sofia Gigante or a Salvatore Moroni, which really, really was... I really enjoyed.
Sorry, my scene.
Yeah, go ahead, man. Saw yours.
I don't know what episode it is, but when they finally get Bliss and then... they go in the bathroom and Victor's having like a bit
episode
of a moment.
Three.
And he's like, yo, like, I'm basically...
Gonna cut.
Yeah. And then it's funny because like I expected
Oz is a manipulator, man. He's a sick fuck.
Yeah.
He's a sick fuck.
Yeah. But he's shouting at him, yeah. And what he's saying to
Golden,
him
go,
is so
go.
Tapped. And he's calling him useless, that you know, and the fact that he's letting him go, and obviously now we have the context, yeah, okay, of why he's so freaking fucking needy and needs to be loved or needs to be like
feel important.
Yeah, like feel important in like so, he tells Vic to go, yeah, and then Vic, the loyalty that he shows, okay, is what Penguin actually teaches him in the first three eps. He comes back and does that. That whole scene for me, that whole sequence was fantastic. But the bathroom scene in particular was brilliant. Mm-hmm. Like from both of them, and it's the first time he got frustrated at Vic's stuttering. So he's like, oh, get it out, Vic. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Was that the same episode? Same episode where he took him for dinner.
And he beefed the guy.
And he's like, let him speak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it just highlights who Penguin really is.
Who really is, bro.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, everything is to his advantage until it isn't.
Yeah.
And then as soon as it isn't, it's like, fuck everybody.
Yeah. But importantly, that scene is also the art of manipulation.
Yeah.
Grooming, and we see that in the real world, right, where mob guys or guys in crime, gang members are able to groom younger people or more vulnerable people, into doing their bidding, into doing their work, into going to different places and doing what they need for them, for their gain. And I think that scene speaks perfectly to like the art of grooming within the crime world, which is like it's like a cycle, right? So let's say Victor had survived. Who knows, he could have gone on to be one of the other mob bosses who goes on to groom somebody else. It's like a cycle thing.
And that's the thing, okay, I actually think part of the reason that he does get rid of Vic, okay, is because he sees the potential in Vic. Like Vic is a lot more, like the fact that, you know, Oz says to Vic, yo, like, you know, the fact that you brought in Link, like, I didn't even like see that move, you know what I mean? And that's a really smart move. And I think even small things like that, people that have threatened him, I don't think it was like, obviously the weakness of family has a point to it, yeah, but I generally think it's also the fact that he saw somebody actually maybe being him
growing.
You know, yeah, mm-hmm. I was saying growing in the shadows and being more charismatic, the fact that he was able to actually convince all of the bosses to come down when Penguin couldn't the first two, three times. Mm. Do you know what I'm saying?
We saw that in the scene where at the start of the episode when Victor kind of does an Oz-esque speech where he's trying to rile the crowd and get them on side and get them to sort of come to Oz's bidding. And that very much reminds me of numerous speeches that Oz has sort of done in the season. So,
yeah. And it's so funny because Oz tells him early on, like, it's not about getting like 30, 40 people on one side, okay? It's about one person being loyal to you. And you could arguably say in that scene when Vic is being like, guys, we should go back, the guy from the Chinese mob, okay, he kind of like looks at him and says,
yeah,
you know what? All right, cool. He punches him to be like, don't get shot. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? But then later on, he's the one that actually ties everything in together. Yeah. He was able to get loyalty from his passion, from everything that he was doing. And he got one Donnie on his side and everyone backs it. Do you know what I'm saying? So I think the fact that Vic isn't here no more, okay, is because he was more of a threat in 10 years' time, like you said, or 20 years' time.
Yeah.
And boom, which is obviously makes Penguin even more a piece of shit.
Yeah, yeah. One of the aspects of the series that I really enjoy is that this series draws heavy inspiration from like the gangster genre, the sort of Martin Scorsese-esque world of like Scarface and Godfather and The Sopranos, and you can clearly see the influence that this series takes from particularly The Sopranos in terms of Tony Soprano and Oz's relationship with his mother, and then the crime war between the Falcones and the Maronis, and then but also the class dividing Gotham and the two different worlds that can appear in one universe, which the Batman didn't necessarily either do or have the chance to do because it's doing a much bigger.
It touched on through like news stories,
but
like never through people.
I really enjoyed that element of the series because it ties into like this sort of Italian American mobster thing that is so heralded in terms of storytelling, but it's brought it to the modern day within Gotham, within Oz, in this series. So I really enjoyed that. I want to know you guys' thoughts in terms of Victor as a character. How did you find him this season? Renzi Fellies played Victor in the series, and I was really, really impressed with his acting ability and the character Victor, who had multiple sides to him when he developed across the series, the season. Sorry, thoughts on Victor?
I really enjoyed his character. Possibly outside of Sophia, my favourite supporting character.
Nice.
In the show, he added a bit more depth into Penguin's character as a whole, because I don't think like the stuff that we talked about earlier, we're not seeing that the more vulnerable and the more caring side of Oz if it wasn't for Victor being there. And even Victor's progression throughout the season and his character arc developing throughout, but the more time that he spent within Gotham and within the underworld, because when he first met him, he's kind of a meek child.
He's a criminal, like he's just doing petty crime.
To survive for what, one guy that's probably
after the flooding, right?
After the flooding, one guy that's putting him squid that
piece of shit
they got him into, and that's when we first meet him. And then towards the end of episode 7, we see him essentially kill Squid. That's something that we wouldn't have thought that he'll be capable of in the first episode. But because of the writing and his character progression and the character arc, going to that result made sense for his character in all attempts to protect Oz.
But it wasn't like Victor went from petty criminal to up and coming mob or potentially. There was sort of back and forth. He has the journey in episode 3, I believe, where we get to find out about his family and so on and so forth.
Yep.
And then the girlfriend comes and she offers him an opportunity to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And we see him, the sort of the back and forth and the tug of war inside him, where he's like, I'm kind of scared of this Oz guy, but he showed me there's potential humanity in him. But then this is the girl that I potentially have a future with, and this is my way out of Crown Point. But I love Crown Point. This is where I grew up.
Yeah.
But he goes back, what do you call it, like that whole family, like seeing like his family, what they stand for. Do you remember he was talking about how like his dad has a good job. He works at a garage, right? And then
he wasn't getting paid.
Penguin's able to kind of like convince him, like, yo, like
you deserve more.
How is the world fair?
The American
he's
dream.
Got good, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do you know
that
what
speech
I mean?
Is so cold,
bro. That speech is amazing, yeah, bro. Yeah. Because like he tells him, bro, your dad done it the right way. He done it the right way.
What did you gain?
And then what happened? Yeah, do you know what I'm saying? And it's like raw. And then like it and it's so smart because obviously Penguin doesn't know that he's doing it, but
oh, he knows.
No. Yeah, he doesn't know that he's keeping Vic from running away. Do you know what I'm saying? Okay, and then like Vic has all of that in his mind and always thinking as well, I have this girl here, but I can have like a better life here and be protected and be at home. Do you know what I'm saying? And honestly, the manipulation is absolutely outstanding.
I think that whole scene also touches on, I think like what's the most overarching theme of Penguin is to feel important, to feel like you have some value within the world that you live in. And I feel like Victor realizing everything that he's been through with Oz and now potentially leaving all of that and going somewhere where he has to start all over again versus him kind of being someone, kind of having a purpose where he is in Gotham. I think that's one of the main reasons why he didn't want to leave. But yeah.
And then also, when, as you mentioned, when he does kill Squid, you can see
he's shook by him.
You can see how impacted he was by what he's done. And Oz says something really interesting. Where he says it gets easier.
It actually
gets easier the more you do this, which speaks to the art of manipulation from Oz, but it also speaks to like how lost you can get in that world once you step in and you do a particular crime or carry out a particular crime. You can get really lost in it.
But like him, like world. Like Oz saying that, because after that he does quite a lot of crazy shit. Yeah, like he burns the
the Maroni's,
okay, yeah. And then what do you call it? And also, and then even the in episode 7 where they bring the bomb, he rallies everybody to be like, we're family, we're gang, let's back each other. Mm-hmm. And man couldn't even shout out, bomb,
bro. That's bummed me so much.
Bro, but again, it gets easier, yeah. Right? It's because that one sentence literally defines the people that have died in his life. Because it's not even that he's directly killing them, but the fact that he's so easily able to pick himself like that. Okay, even when it's. When it's not even convenient, like he could have generally just shouted and then ran, you know what I mean? But it's easier for him just to be like, you know what? Let me concentrate on just getting away. That's fucked up. Like honestly, it's just that one line just describes him in so many levels.
Hi, I'm Donald Glover, and you are watching or listening to the Post Credit Scene podcast.
One thing I want to get into before we talk about Christine Milioti is who played Sofia Falcone, or Gigante, sorry, is this series impressed me because it's dark and violent, but it's not necessarily over the top reliant on violence to keep you gripped. Like there's very much storytelling, there's character development, there's nuance to these particular characters, and there's so many intertwining relationships. But when we do get the violent scenes, there are so many very, very good like action crime violent scenes, like the one we saw in this final episode where the police officer was taking his drops and like Colin Farrell shoots him through the eye, and it was like, that's a beautifully shot scene. But this isn't like a recurring thing in the series, which I really enjoyed.
Evan, the blood stain on the side of the lens,
and they did the same thing with the guy in the mirror towards the end. Christine Milioti, man, who played Sofia Falcone Gigante.
First of all,
come on. That's another Emmy right there.
Yeah, man. She's Leng as well. She's like Psycho Leng. You know what I'm saying?
I can't lie.
The yellow dress.
She's good milk. The yellow dress was a mad thing. By the way, yeah, Joe is. It was everything. It was the figure. It was the menacingness. You know what I'm saying? It was the smile. It was the frowning. Everything. I was like, yo.
But I think
how
that thing for me that speaks to, firstly, obviously the fantastic acting from Christine Milioti, who's superb.
Yeah.
But it also speaks to the character and how nuanced she is. And we see she's cold. She's calculated. She's deranged. But we also saw a different side to her. In episode 4, we saw. There was humanity in her.
Yeah.
We saw there was somebody that actually cares for people, that cares for women. She was in this tug of war again within herself of, I'm a Falcone and I'm potentially the next up. But she knew what her father had been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that inner sort of turmoil that she had to carry throughout was really, really interesting. But as I said, she's a multifaceted character. And that episode, if you weren't already on her side, it drew you towards her further more because you understood who she became and why she is the way she is. And she's lost so much, potentially, well, it's not due to her fault. It's due to the greed and the corruption of the crime world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I found really interesting. But yeah, share your thoughts on Sofia Gigante Falcone.
Brilliant performance for the Penguin, probably the best performance. Her and Colin Farrell are like...
Bad for bad,
yeah. Literally, like, she could have had her own season. Like, you could have shifted the lens of the show just slightly and could have been in a whole season based on... And her interaction with Gotham.
That's a good point.
I really appreciated, as you said, very multifaceted, because we get scenes like when she talks about her brother, or she's like scenes in regards to her brother and how delicate and calm she can be.
And the love that she has.
And the love that she has for her brother, even like in episode 4, when we get scenes of her like showcasing fear and being extremely afraid.
She's in Arkham, yeah.
When she's in Arkham, and even when she was in the cell. Right before they told her that she's going to go to Arkham to get assessed. And then we get from that to complete polar opposite of her just being Stone Cold Cold, and like literally her eyes are not moving at all. Like there's no life in her eyes. There's no emotion there. And I don't think that's an easy thing to do. It's not often that we get that region of emotion for one particular character in one season. She's great, man. Like there's not a single scene that she was in that I don't think she done great in. I feel like I can't say she stole every scene because Colin Farrell was also there. Wow. But every scene that Colin Farrell was not in and she's in, she was easily the best performer there.
You mentioned something really interesting though. Even outside of episode 4, which was like our context episode of like backstory and nuance, which we love, right?
Mm.
When they're done well, because sometimes they're just thrown in there and it's like, well, what are you giving me backstory for? But this series actually done it in a way where it takes you back and forth between the past and the present. But what I really enjoyed is, like, for example, in episode 8, again, you still see the humanity in her.
When she's
tapped for torturing Francis Cobb, Oz's mum, but then you can see that Oz, you're not gonna save your mum's finger here. Like, you see the
oh my god, bro! Like there was like the first look here where she kind of like she was talking quite a lot. Everything stops talking and she just looks at him. And she's like, she's not even like angry. She's just like, disgusting. What?
Yeah.
And then she goes back to talking, but she's still shocked. Do you know what I mean? And then like afterwards, okay, like she was like, what'd she say? She's like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And for somebody, by the way, to go through Arkham, go from this soft belly person to being a pretty much like a tap person.
Yeah.
To say to you,
what's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you? Is a mad.
You're the one that's about to authorize someone's finger being chopped off.
Yeah.
Your mum.
Yeah.
Bro, man said, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Her command in those scenes is break. I don't like. It's not something that you necessarily deep when I'm watching TV shows on a day to day basis or watch a film on a day to day basis, but. And that just shows the level of difficult it is for you to just command a scene like that. And for you to do it consistently over 8 episodes or whenever you're in it. Even the first scene that she's in, when she walks in, when Penguin is talking about the drug drop to her uncle and to Johnny. Yeah. And then we just see that in the background. And she steals the moment. Like, it's all about her. And then the scene that she has right next after that, when they're outside in the car, and she's like talking to him, as in he's trying to get away. But she's like, I'm not letting you go. we're going out for dinner. And then they have the whole dinner situation. Like, there's so much focus and emphasis on her. I can't even remember what Penguin said in those scenes. I can't remember because there's so much mystique and so much, like, for lack of a better word, aura in her character.
Her aura's not.
And she does it so well throughout the whole season. And it's not just her being menacing. Sometimes it's just her being calculated. Even like when she's had the conversation with the other mob guys and saying, oh, they took so much from you. Like, join me. You'll be like, you'll be looked at in a better favour.
That's hard taking it from Oz.
That scene.
Or you could just argue that in aspects they are not fully, but in aspects they are two of the same.
They're parallels,
That's the thing. That throughout the whole, like, each character for the most part are very similar. They're just in different circumstances.
Facts.
Even with Sophia, her come up when she has the conversation with
she's been overlooked her whole life.
And she has the conversation with Oz's girl, Oz's thing.
Eve,
in the things that you grew up with.
What
God, again, stealing the show. But even she's both Eve, she held it up, bro. That is a great scene.
She was manipulating Sophia at the same time.
Like, yeah,
Sophia said something like, "You know how to make men feel good. You know how to make people feel good about themselves," which is something that plays into the final scene of
the
series. So yeah, as you said, I just wanted to say I agree. Like, she was great. Really, really enjoyed her character. Again, supporting character who isn't necessarily present throughout, but when she's present, you feel
her
presence in the series. So yeah, no, really impressive stuff, man. Are there any? Wait, let me find my notes quickly because my question was very pertinent. My question to you is, particularly with Colin Farrell, are there any other memorable moments that you have that you sort of felt brought sort of depth to his character for you guys?
That's my question.
I think there's a lot in episode 8, but I don't want to necessarily touch on that right now.
Let's
just go into it, man.
I think one scene, obviously, the last scene with him and Victor.
Share your thoughts on the scene. Spoilers ahead, obviously.
Oh yeah, I'll make sure.
So it's the moment that Victor says, "We're like family." It was like a switch.
And by the way, it was the only time when he was speaking that he started.
Yeah.
When he said family.
Yeah. In that scene, it was the only time that
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know how mad that is, bro?
Yeah,
and he started hard, like, as in, like, He probably was like, family.
That means he really felt that one. Like, that means like
he
really
was nervous to say it.
Yeah.
You know, that's,
but when he said that, there was a switch in Oz.
Because he went...
Evan was like a slow build-up.
Fuck, Vic.
Evan was saying stuff like, you seen a wall. Like, you've been there from me from the beginning. And then when he said when I saw that, like, I know what this is leading to. But
because
I
thought, the score came in at the same time.
Yeah. And I thought like the motivation behind that was because of the conversation that Oz had with the guy that works in government in terms of like...
The councilman.
Yeah, the councilman is like, you need to come out of this clean, innit? And obviously when saying that...
Oh, Vicks is a loose end.
Yeah, exactly. Because you've been there with me from the beginning. So you know everything that you might essentially like rat me out. But I think like the motivation behind that was the fact that people that really know Oz... know that he's the devil. His mum, Sophia, his brothers probably knew it as well. Like, people that actually know Oz for who he is as a person know how much of a piece of shit he actually is. Mm. And now that he looks at Vic, is that you're calling me family because they keep getting closer and closer. One day you're going to realise who I really am. And like Huss mentioned earlier, is that there's probably a level of fear in terms of him doing, Vic doing to Oz what Oz did to Sophia, what Oz did to the Falcons, what he did to his brothers, what he did. Essentially, snaking somebody. But Vic wouldn't do it for the sake of snaking him to be on top, for the sake of, like, you actually should not be around. And I think there's a level of fear that came to Oz to that.
And, like, I sort of saying, like, there's a thing where it's like, you can arguably say, okay, that Falcone, who's the dad again?
Carmine.
Yeah.
Carmine Falcone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can arguably say, yeah, that thing, Carmine in the Batman, right, gives the Penguin the title, gives him the money, gives him everything, right? And he's in that category of, he knows who his brother is, right? So what he does is he gives him control of the Iceberg Lounge. Like, he gives him also a control of Bliss to give him that sense of power, okay, in order for him not to snake him, to stay loyal. Yeah, 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 yeah. And they say it at right at the end of the series. It's with Rex's conversation with his mum.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, men like him, people like him, okay, they can be very useful in our line of work, right? But we have to be able to control them. And it's not about money or blah, blah, blah. It's about
feeling important.
Yeah, it's about feeling important, right? And that is what Carmine did. He made him feel important. So he never thought that he had to be Carmine. You know, it's like, oh, I'm good where I am. If I step forward, calm, right? The problem is when Carmine passes away, the role vaporized, because every single person after that, right, whether it be the family, whether it be his fucking crew,
the associates,
literally goes back to disrespecting him like he was the driver again, because Carmine was his key. You know what I'm saying? So like right at the end where like Sophia is kind of Vic is like, all right, cool, like, I'm going to be the Penguin to his Carmine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like that. And Penguin, Oz just sees this, like, well, I think anyway, that he sees this, like, this vision of, no, because you're going to want more. You know, you're going to want more. Once you get a taste, you're going to want more, because once I got a taste, I wanted more.
It gets easier.
And then just, but... piece of shit. I think after I forgot what episode it was. Yeah, I think after the bomb one where he didn't say bomb, I was like, yeah, this guy has to die. I was like, I can't have Penguin leave this series alive. Honestly, I was fuming. I was like, bro, how can even as like a PR thing from Warner, how can we promise?
There's no redemption out for him.
But
one thing on Oz, not necessarily on Oz, but his relationship with his mum. I don't know if that's what you wanted to segue into.
Go through.
Mentally ill, full stop.
Yeah, but obviously I really appreciate the way that they've written their relationship, because it ties into I think it's the Oedipus complex, where somebody wants to kill, essentially, you want to kill your father so you can be with your mother. That's essentially what Oz was going through. Essentially, he wants to kill everybody that his mum loved just so he could have all his love to himself. And I really did like the way that they read that into the story. And even that's not what he killed for.
Give me no reason. I'm just saying.
No, but he didn't even see that connection, because remember the little dance that he did. He wasn't there for that.
It's cute, sir.
Yeah, and obviously, at that point, she was already a vegetable.
Yeah, facts.
Yeah, but yeah, I really did appreciate the way that they wrote that scene. It was kind of, it took me kind of by surprise in terms of he was the reason why his brothers died and the reason why he did it. I don't think like he intentionally did it, but he intentionally let them die because he saw opportunity. He's an opportunist. He didn't lock them up intentionally to kill them. But then when
if they're gone, well,
if they're gone, what, like I'm enjoying this with my mum. Like I don't know you guys here, but he knew it was.
So do you think that if he went back to the apartment, right, and then his mum was out, let's say, or she was out like dancing, do you think he would have gone back and opened the door?
I don't think so.
Do you think it's because when he got yard and she was like, let's watch a film, he was like, ah, calm, that, and he didn't want to get out of that moment, but he didn't go back.
Yeah, therefore, because even in that moment, you can see he's constantly looking.
He's constantly looking
over the shoulder because he knows, like he knows at that moment. But I think I'm not
Rich,
sure.
He acted, by the way, the young actor.
He done. But this is just so well, cast, like from top to bottom, man. Really well casted.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting duality, right? Because in one sense, the heart of the series is his love and the relationship that he has with his mother. Mm-hmm. But you're also led into like a full sense of security of that love that he has for her. Because at the end of the day, he's always going to be self-serving. So whilst you do believe he loves his mother, it's only to a certain extent. And we saw that in the scene with Sophia when she almost had Francis's finger chopped off. Like he was so unwilling and incapable of telling the truth. He is so deceitful and he's a liar and he's so sneaky and any opportunity he struggles to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And we see that throughout and it's always been a constant.
Did you think that's how the scene would have gone by? Like I thought he was going to tell the truth. For his mum's sake. Like I
did as well.
But I like the fact that they.
What's
going to happen.
That's not the first time that they did something that. Not that I had an issue with, I didn't expect it, but I appreciated. There was a scene when Sophia had with Johnny, and then she had... in the basement.
Oh, yeah.
When she had him tied up, and then Johnny was like, oh...
Talking about the mum.
And he said something along the lines, I couldn't help her, but I will help you. I thought she was going to off him then and there. So when I see him sitting on the table, I was like, no, this doesn't make sense. It's like...
But then...
Yeah. But then it's like, okay, now, I get it.
By the way, it's a really smart movement. Yeah.
No, it is. Because obviously...
She used him to get the troops on side.
Yeah.
And then offed him in front of them to show...
I'm in charge. Yeah. And then, also, just to go back on the scene that you mentioned with Sophia and the mum, yeah? Okay, and... cutting of the pinky. There's even a bit afterwards, yeah, where she lets her go, and then she looks at Oz, yeah, and says to Oz, bro, you don't care about anyone.
Like, no, she was
like,
surprised.
Like yeah. And she was like, well, even her and you care about her, but not enough as you play out, you know what I'm saying? Like you're even lying to her just about how much you love her. So even his psycho injuries, like his feeling about his mum, which is what makes him driven and tapped. Even that isn't really authentic enough. Do you know what I'm saying? And even we get that in the last scene where it's like actually the level that he loves her is in this weird, creepy. Kind of like she's the excuse, right? For all the terrible things that he's done, she's the excuse. And it's like he has to live on that because if he doesn't have the excuse, then he can't live. And that's the reason why he's keeping her fucking alive. Because if she's dead, okay, he has no more excuse to be a bastard.
Mm-hmm.
He has no more motivation. Yeah, he has no more reason, okay? She is the excuse. That's all she is. Mm-hmm. But he always comes first.
Yeah.
He always comes first. It's nuts.
Yeah. Are there any sort of heartfelt moments throughout the series that really sort of caught you in terms of, you know, emotional storytelling across the 8 episodes? The one that I think of immediately is probably just because it was the last episode. It was actually the final scene where Deirdre O'Connell's character, Frances, she's on the bed, incubator bed. I'm assuming, yeah, the bed she's on.
Anyway. Yeah.
And like Oz is telling her, Mark, I did it for you. Mm. We're here, we're at the top of the building. I promised you this life and you finally got it.
Mm-hmm.
And then
there's a tear.
And you see the tear that comes down, but it's also the fact that in that scene, you see the fact that he's doing this for himself.
Yeah.
She asks you three episodes
she
before.
She said, get me, fam.
If I get in this situation, off me.
Do it. I don't want to live anymore. And he made the promise that he would. He cuddled her in the water like, Mum, I've got you. Did her makeup. which then mirrors the scene at the end again with Eve, where the makeup was very similar. The hairstyle she wore, the dress, the humble
dress is the exact same dress.
Yeah, I think that one is one of the scenes that comes to mind.
Can I ask, what do you think the tear was for?
I think it was to symbolize, like, yo, like this is not what I want, you know?
Yeah.
And I said to Gaz, when you watch the whole series, yeah, okay, she says there's a bit where she's in the yard and she's obviously, you know, going through her like dementia and stuff, and she says stuff like, you know, Oz is gonna do this, he's gonna do that, and we never get the origin of that until obviously we get the scene at Monroe's and
it's kind of breezy,
yeah, and it's like you realize that she never asked for it, mm-hmm. She never asked for a penthouse and the yard and da da da. She never asked for that, bro. She just wants her babies, bro. You know what I mean?
Well, she never asked for it.
She never asked for it, bro. It's
only after what he did is when, and when Rex tells her you can that use Oz.
She just manipulated what he said.
Is when she's like, well, I might as well benefit in a different way from.
Yeah.
From
but she never asked for it, bro. He said that to make up for what he did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? But obviously, we think that she asked for it because right at the start, when we see her that first time in that house, okay, blah, 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 and she says, Oz is going to give me this. Even when she gets caught by Sophia, and when she's like, Oz is going to come and kill you and be like the king of Gotham and da da da. Just, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
she's just like using it. But then we finally get the context of where that conversation came from, and it was literally him saying it to her because obviously he offed her sons, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So like, she never asked for it. So I think that tier is everything that represented. That
I've read the monster.
Yeah, that this is not what I wanted. This is not my dream. This is his dream, right? I just didn't want him to be here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is an extra scene with Rex would have been cold though.
Yeah, so because we never really got an answer as to
he must have just like changed her mind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Safe.
But I think we saw when she changed her mind, when he started saying, I'm gonna do this for you and I love you. And you know what it was? It was when he was telling her the small nuances of who she is.
Yeah, yeah. So I see you.
When you're thinking, da, 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 when you're thinking that you have a smoke when you're thinking, you have a drink when you're stressed, blah, blah, blah. She felt seen by him.
Yeah.
And she saw the child in him again for like a brief period. And that's when she changed her mind, because just before that, she looked at Rex and Rex looked at her and Rex was like,
yeah.
And I think that's when she was obviously being sort of manipulated.
Because I think that's the moment she said, oh, it's going to take you on a ride.
Yeah.
But
yeah. And then the last thing he says was, he was like, even if you don't believe me, that's fine, because I'm gonna prove you wrong, okay? Yeah. But just one thing, don't give up on me.
Yeah.
And boom, here we are.
Any other sort of funny moments that you guys can think about?
Funny.
any humorous moments that stand out to you? Mine straight away again goes back to that one with Colin Farrell, with Oz and Salvatore in the underground again. Because there's a moment where he says,
oh,
it's a callback to the Batman when he says,
I got you.
Oz is flying through, obviously he sees in the windscreen that Batman's flying through the fire as well. So yeah, that was one of my favorite sort of funny moments, because I just really enjoyed that little Easter egg to the Batman, which is obviously a film that you guys know I love. But yeah, anything else that stands out for you guys?
I think second episode when he asked Vic to sneak in to the yard.
Oh,
obviously Vic gets caught and just
Vic
like
gets caught a few times in
and then he runs away. And I'm like, yo, bruv.
There was also this scene where it wasn't necessarily humorous. It was really enjoyable where you see Vic's in Oz's car, the purple car.
Mm-hmm.
And then the police officer comes.
Oh, yeah, my yeah, yeah, dude. Yeah, yeah.
And you see Vic is like slowly but surely starting to understand how to maneuver in this world. And he gives the police officer.
Yeah,
the,
yeah, yeah.
He's like, you gave him the money? He was really proud of Vic, which was like a nice balancing act, I guess, of humor, but also like very smart wit from him.
It's also that the officer stopped him because he was black. Like, he's black.
Black, you're in this purple.
Young,
yeah.
In this car, da da da, okay. And, like, he made that, like, very obvious. And,
yeah.
And, yeah. And I think Oz knew, like, at the moment as well, it was definitely a risk to keep him in that car. But I guess it was the test that he didn't know that he needed. You know what I mean? But, yeah, super cool from Victor.
Are there any defining moments in this series that, for you, signify Oz's rise to prominence? Is there a moment that you saw in the series where you're like, ah, oh, I see
the montage, man. when he got Bliss up and running and he got the underground. That scene, by the way, the episode prior where he was like, this is it, this is the tunnels. And by the way, call back to where his where his fucking where his brothers died.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Okay. And then he gets on the generator and then he's like, yeah, this is, and then like we come back to the next episode and the Gigantes and Maronis, they can't even find them because they're just going underground. Do you know what I'm saying? I think that whole thing, the whole operation was everything that he learned from doing what's the previous drug?
Bliss.
No. Drops from doing drops from Carmine, okay, from taking advantage of that. Nobody is looking at the poor and unfortunate people, okay. And by the way, okay, the crazy thing is he's acting like he's fighting for them, or he's acting like he's from there, right? But you can, but he's caused so much death in that area. Mm. Do you know what I mean? But that whole scene for me made me think, right, he's actually good at what he does, yeah, but he's still a piece of everything. Ends with his
that's an interesting duality you mentioned, because he claims to be the man of the people. Sophia mentions it a few times. He acts like he's here for the...
And he says, yeah, by the way. She goes, Oswald Cobb, the man, the people. He literally goes, yeah, yeah.
But the new one, the way Colin Farrell does it is cold.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a scene in episode 2 that I really liked, is when there was the... one of the Maronis guys was kidnapped. And they had him, but he was like in a coma because he was dying.
Oh, he's underground in the Falcon.
Yeah. And obviously, it's kind of tight for Oz because I think he kills him and he tries to escape. But he has the knife.
When he
switches the, he gives the knife to the bodyguard.
Crazy!
I thought he was giving it to Johnny.
I thought you were gonna sit up.
I thought he was gonna give it to Johnny. But again, the writer's like submerged. And he gave it to Johnny, and then not Johnny. Sorry, he gave it to the bodyguard. Yeah, and I really like that scene because again, it submerged expectations. Like I thought it was gonna go to Johnny, but the way they did it was much better. Because now you keep Johnny on for a few more episodes. But yeah, it's a great scene, man.
Great scene. Yeah. Wow. I forgot about that scene in a sense because it was quite a while back.
Yeah.
Sophia and her niece.
Julian Rush? Oh, the niece, sorry. I thought you were talking about the doctor.
Nah. to be fair, out of all of the characters, the side characters, I think he's the weakest. I think he's the weakest, but I think it's because he wasn't written to outshine her. Do you know what I'm saying? Or like, he wasn't written to be a very polarizing figure.
Yeah.
She just needed somebody to bounce off of every now and again. Do you know what I'm saying? So he played his role very much. James Milner.
He's also her sort of connection. James Milner, just close to what you meant. He's also her connection to Arkham, which in one sense is what made her who she is today. So I guess it keeps
the trauma's there, fam.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, sorry, going to Harvey Nice, yeah, bro, the mirror effect there was incredible, bro.
Mm.
You know what I mean? The dark hair, okay, sitting down, kind of like, you know, crawled up, okay, and then like being that innocent-minded girl where right at the start when Sophia got sent to Arkham, you know, she was trying to tell everyone that this was happening, you know what I mean? Okay, like, you know, I'm not meant to be here, blah, blah, blah. And then instead of her being like her brother and coming to her niece's aid, because obviously she killed her whole family, right? She comes over and almost threatens her, you know what I mean? Almost like tells her, like, yo, nothing happened. It was a complete accident. But if you do remember something, she's frightened, like immediately. And you can even tell, obviously, the whole point of Arkham in the comics, yeah, is that 80% of all these people are being put away by the Falcons or the Maronis, and the doctors are paid by them to put them under like psychosis and different things, blah, blah, blah. So you get normal people just turning into fucked up motherfuckers, and she's almost accepting that her niece, because she is a loose end, is like, eh, cool. Like,
well, one thing I would say about the scene that makes me appreciate Sophia as a character and how she differs from Oz is that she's more honest, even though she didn't outright say, yeah, I killed your family, but she made it very, very clear.
She said, they
deserve to die.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad they're dead. And I actually do kind of appreciate her as a character specifically, because as much as she does shitty things, it's more so, I feel like her issue is more so the circumstances that she's been put in rather than her being actively a piece of shit person.
It's also hypocritical, though.
What for her?
What she's essentially done to her niece is her niece, right? Or cousin, niece, cousin, niece, cousin.
One of the two.
Cousin, I guess.
In a sense, what's essentially happened to her, in a sense of being abandoned, because she... Do you get where I'm coming from?
Yeah, she got, essentially because her mum died, didn't it?
Yeah.
But I think the difference is that she was getting a get back for the people that fucked her over.
But she's now left herself, well, she's left her cousin in the same situation where her cousin's got no family. She had no family because as soon as the Falcone family cut her off,
yeah,
there was no way back for her. Even though they welcomed her back, it was sure. From her perspective, it was done, right?
And yeah.
We saw that when she was so willing to get rid of them. And it's the same thing that's happened to her niece is now in
Arkham. Arkham, yeah. But I think the only difference might be that...
It's not fully the same.
Yeah. Like, she tries to give... I think, again, goes back to how I appreciate it in some kind of way, because she does kind of try to give a helping hand, something that she never received when she was at Arkham. But yeah, she did put her niece in a very, very difficult situation.
Tricky situation.
Yeah.
One final scene that I really enjoyed from episode 8 was the scene between Councilman Sebastian Haiti and Oz.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really enjoyed that scene because one thing that it does, it plays into like real world tropes of like, when you're in a sticky situation,
snitch.
You see how willing people are to snitch. Like when you're down bad, your last resort is to snitch. And that's exactly what Oz did.
Yeah.
In this episode, he snitched on Sophia. He got her arrested. Because he even said, I'm going to have to go sideways about this one, Vic, which he did with Councilman Haiti. But again, it plays into the character that we know Oz to be. Deceitful, liar, master manipulator. And we saw that when he tells Haiti that, oh, Sophia blew up. She blew up the underground. Sophia was the one that's doing the drops and the blitz. Bliss. Completely, essentially everything that he did that was wrong, that was corrupting Gotham and corrupting Crown Point, is what he said that Sophia was doing.
Sophia and Sal.
Yeah, he gave a bit of Sal.
And the crazy thing is, by the way, that scene, yeah, the town hall scene was probably the Batman scene that we got.
I hear you.
In the whole thing, because it was obviously in the same city hall where the brother with the bomb was.
Oh.
Do you remember?
The DA.
Yeah.
Is that the same place? It just might have been lit differently then.
Nah, bro, it's the same stairs. Same stairs, same everything.
Maybe just different rooms. Oh,
Yeah. But yeah, same. Like, and then obviously we see the female mayor as well. Okay.
So what that scene does, it plays again into like the corruption of politics, right?
Yeah.
That Councilman Haiti was so willing to put his name in the limelight and put himself in the spotlight. He was willing to take information from a guy that he knew was corrupt and bring him into this world, potentially, which I think plays into the Batman too, of being sort of an upstanding member.
But that's what you said earlier, bro. You said that society. They created Gotham in Gotham, right? And that's exactly what they've done. Like, in this moment, okay, if they were like to us, they gave us a small reminder of, yo, when the Batman is beefing everyone and also in Jim Gordon is trying to stop like corruption, da, 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 da. This is the backstory. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. This is how it's happening.
This is what's happening, but like that you don't see.
But you don't see in the film.
Day-to-day.
Facts.
Day-to-day,
yeah. It's sick, bro.
And I love how they ended the season with the Batman.
The logo?
Yeah, the sign at the end, yeah.
Batman sign, yeah. That was really, really cool.
Wavy, bro.
Yeah.
Wavy.
Any final thoughts, lads? Because I've just loved the season. Do you want to rank your favourite episodes? Let's do our top three episodes.
It's definitely 4, 7, and 8.
Rank. I'm going to go 4, 8.
You got me that order?
No. If I've ranked them... Oh. I think 7 will be third.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go 4 second, but an 8 first. But
bias,
it might be, but it, with 8,
eight is cold. Eight is cold.
There's so many things that, and again, I always said that wrapping up a film like a film series or wrapping up a TV series is always very difficult to do.
So hard.
And
especially when you've enjoyed it.
Yeah, and it's like because there's so many things that you need to put. I don't think they missed a step into it. And I do appreciate episode being a great episode, but it could have been anything that you wanted to make it, essentially like just giving Sophia a proper backstory and allowing us to sympathize with her. But I feel like episode 8 was a lot more difficult to do. And I feel like they both stuck the landing. So I'm gonna have to go with episode 8, you know.
I think 7 isn't in there for me in the top three. 7's cold, yeah, but 7 feels like a nice
but it's got the whole backstory with the mom. It's got the death of the child.
I know, man. It's cold. It's so cold. And episode 4, just to say, okay, episode 4 felt like a very much like a Last of Us
episodic thing.
Yeah. But I think if we go four first, which I think we're all in.
I'm going eight first.
Okay, I'm going
four first.
I'm going four first. I'm going eight second.
Okay.
And I'm going one third.
Fair.
Yes.
Episode one. Oh, that was a good episode, to be fair. I don't think there's a miss for the episodes in this season.
Yeah.
There are some highs and some, like, you know, some good episodes.
Low highs.
Rank.
No.
There's some high highs. Highs and low highs.
Yeah. There's no medium.
Yeah, there's no medium.
It's really good team.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got eight. So, I've got 8-4-7.
8-4-7.
Yeah.
Yeah. 8-4-7. Eight's the best.
And then you're saying
8-4-7.
8-4-7 as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, cool. Really, really, really good. And if we had to rank our top three acting performances in the series,
I think just
1A and 1B.
I'm gonna have to go Colin first, just because the only thing that tips him over Christian Milioti is that the prosthetics, the physical attribute, okay, the walking, like he had to do a little bit more in regards to
a lot more,
like to embody this iconic character,
makes
right?
The world believable.
Yes. Yeah. Whereas like she had more of a what you'd call an actor's job.
Yeah. You know
what I'm saying? She was given a script and she interpreted it fantastically, right? Whereas he had a whole character and role to play. So I think just based off that I think he's first, she's second, and third is so tough for me.
Yeah. Really, you're going with the mum, innit?
Colin.
I was going with
Sophia,
the mum.
Colin. And Christy Milioti, and then Deirdre O'Connell.
Yeah,
and Francis Cobb. Easy for me.
Yeah,
and Renzi Fellis has been incredible as well.
Yeah, Vic is cold, but he doesn't have enough scenes.
That's my thing.
He plays less of a part in the second half of the season, then comes back to prominence in this final episode. But for like episodes 7 and 6, he's less visible. Not as involved. But we got a great episode with him in episode 3.
Yeah. Oh, what an episode, bro!
I think I might go with the mum as well.
I think I'm going with the mum too.
But yeah.
She killed it, bro. Especially the last three episodes. She was out.
But even the guy that plays Johnny.
No, but he wasn't enough.
I know, but he was so good.
He was so good. He was good. He was cold. But I just think, yeah, like his Francis Cobb just.
Michael Kelly.
Thank you.
He deserves that, man.
He's got some sick films though.
Even TV shows.
He's got crazy.
He's a catalog on TV.
He is a cold actor.
Oh, he's brilliant. Yeah.
Cold actor.
He's superb. Yeah, I agree with you.
But yeah.
Cool. So is that episodes ranked as well?
Yes, episodes. That's
any closing thoughts on this season?
Can I just say, yeah? A 3-man pod when everybody gets their opinions out like this quick, yeah. Bro, deep the episode length.
We covered quite a lot.
If it was like 5 of us, we'd be here for like an hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Probably be arguing with Biss. Rogue thought about Penguin.
God, fuck.
I feel like she's going to upset me with this series because she's watching it. See, I feel like she's going to upset me. Yeah, let's wrap up the episode then. Overall ratings on the season.
I think we'll.
Thoughts and hopes for potentially what this universe might look like going forward. Firstly, for me, I give this series a strong 9.
Yeah,
a strong 9.
Might even be a 9.5.
I'm not even mad.
Bear in mind, you're gonna have to re-rank for your.
It's definitely at least minimum 8.5. Bare minimum, but it's
that's even being me being.
Yeah, it's 9. Me being nice. So let me see how I feel in a few weeks time. But bare minimum will be at 8.5.
I'm gonna say 9 for now.
I think this is easily the best comic book TV show I watched.
Yeah,
for me.
Oh well, it's not mine.
You're gonna say Daredevil. Yeah, yeah.
I don't even need to go there. I know where mine is. But I think if this got more, imagine if this got like a. I want to see how this plays into the Batman. That might help change my mind.
I don't think it's gonna make a difference to you.
I think because it plays right into.
Is it gonna make a difference to how I feel about the show? It shouldn't. I hope it doesn't. Because I think that it should be looked at different entities.
I'm with you.
Do you know? Like, I hope. I was thinking when I was like sitting there, like, do you know how like Marvel when they done like Iron Man 1, Evan Kevin Feige almost saw the birth of the MCU, right? I actually hope, okay, that James Gunn sees this, okay, and then thinks, you are. Do you know what? I don't have to go as wide as a universe, okay, but I can go as wide as picking you were saying, like nuanced characters, okay, that can have like a very much like
Sophia could have. Yeah.
I think that's what they're doing. No, they're doing.
I'm hearing otherwise, man.
Yeah.
So there was a report that came out this week that we were potentially going to get a Joker film, yeah, series, right?
And then James Gunn said that it hasn't been spoken about at all yet.
Okay.
From what I'm hearing from, like, because I listened to the Ringer podcast with Mallory and
Wavy.
And they were saying that they're hearing James Gunn doesn't want to necessarily build out this universe in a sense.
But it's because it's not his.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Okay.
I can't lie, it's going to be hard for him to top this shit though, bro.
Bro, I was very difficult saying to Gaz earlier, okay, the reason why I fell in love with DC growing up, okay, first was because of Batman, right? And because, like, a lot of the stories didn't even involve him, bro, okay? Like, literally, like, his fantastical stories obviously involved, like, the Justice League and everyone else, blah, 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 safe, okay? And that's most of the commercial storylines. But actually, the dark graphic novels and stuff, okay, it's like him, these, like, Poison Ivy, okay, let's say, for, like, 9 books. Because it is a deep story, okay? It's not just based on, like, oh, she's got these powers. It's sexual abuse. And, like, it's so deep, right? There's so many characters in the Batman catalogue that can have such an incredible story in this thing. And they don't have to be standout fucking names like Harley Quinn or Joker.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that, bro. There's so many,
the series
bro.
Alone showed you how interesting it is with just the Falcone and the Maroni crime families and how you can tell stories within that alone. But yeah, sorry, go on.
Yeah, because the story of Gotham, like, I would like more TV shows around the universe of Gotham leading up until the end of Batman 3, because I think we can get a Harvey Dent series, and then we look into the corruption of law enforcement. That's what I want, bro.
Jim Gordon involved.
Jim Gordon series would be cool too,
bro.
The corruption in the GCPD in Gotham.
I think we need that, and I think because the way that they've done the Penguin, it's like, bro, it's like, it's so character focused, and obviously you use Gotham as a backdrop, as like not only do we care about the individual characters, the main characters, I care about the city, and because we've got characters like Victor, we've got characters even like Link, characters like Sophia, that
different places. Link is my guy.
Oh yeah, yeah, no. We need him back for some more. I really like Link.
It's cold.
But yeah, bro, make me care. So, and Gotham is such a big place. There's so many areas that you can tackle. You can tackle the law enforcement. You can tackle the issues that they have within the court system.
We saw the suburbs. I'm not saying that would necessarily be interesting, but we saw the aspect of the suburbs, which is like an aspect that the series had never, or the film had never really delved into. And one thing I will say about that as well is there are stories to tell there, because in The Sopranos, sorry, I keep going back to that.
No, go ahead.
But that series, Tony Soprano he's living in the suburbs, but he's a crime boss.
Yeah.
And there's so many stories you can tell about someone struggling to be a crime boss, but you're also living in the suburbs and trying to raise a family, which is what Tony Soprano's story is. So as you mentioned, you mentioned in the episode before, the universe is vast. There's so many places to explore, which could be...
A series that includes the mayoral-elect.
I think a Harvey Dent series will lead to that.
Yeah, but I think it should be based on both of them.
Well, Harvey Dent versus Bella.
No, because in the comic books, he would technically be Hardy A.
Yeah.
If she's mayor. Yeah. Right, so that's how it would be, because she goes from DA to DA, that.
To mayor, that's how it tends to work, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So he would be her DA, but if we get him at a level that we get him in The Dark Knight, when he's not DA yet, he's actually the assistant DA, and then becomes DA calm. Do you know what I'm saying? Okay, but like that would be so good just to see like that. Okay, because then you get this like umbrella effect of like everything. You know what I mean?
At there.
A Catwoman series. That letter that she sent to her half sister.
Just saying it, man.
What do you mean the letter says?
I said, yo, I'm Leng, you're Leng.
Okay, let's
link up, fam.
I think she might bust her up.
Not knowing how tapped she is.
I think she knows.
Nah, obviously she knows.
She's the hangman.
Who knows?
Of course she knows. She's the hangman. Catwoman knows, she's blown up half of Gotham. Of course she knows. But that's her sister, and they both have been hurt by their father. Of course she knows. She understands.
Yeah, give me a Catwoman series. Give me a Harvey Dent series.
Cool. Post-credits in podcast. Let's do one of those. So ranking for you.
Ranking? One more ranking.
The season. Ranking the season.
Oh, as in the rating?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna go with a 9. Let me be safe for now. Yeah,
I'm
on a 9 as well. It's a really, really good series. If you haven't dived into The Penguin, make sure to check it out. Could highly, highly, highly recommend. Potentially one of the shows of the year. But yeah, we're the post-credit scene podcast, 14HQ Original Lovers of Film, TV and Theatre. It's been a great episode. I'm joined by Hus. We had a great time. This is a great series. And yeah, that's us over and out, man. Make sure to check us out on YouTube, check us out on TikTok, check us out on Instagram. We're across all socials. We're on all DSPs as well. Hit the bell and subscribe on us as well on YouTube, make sure, because we're going to be coming back with some new content between now and the end of the year. And obviously we've got season 4 coming as well, man. Yeah. Season 4 is going to be a crazy one. Some big films coming out next year, so we're definitely
going to massive films.
Also let us know like what are your favourite films and TV shows of the year so far.
Yeah, drop us a comment on the episode,
because there might be some that we might have missed out. There's enough time for us to catch up if that is the case.
Over and out. Yeah.
Alright guys, love y'all.
Cool.
All right, my name is John David Washington, and you are watching and listening to the Post Credit Scene Podcast.